If the garden were out there now, instead of that monstrous, hateful sod, I'd be out in it, tending my vines, fixing tomato tape to wooden stakes to protect the tomatoes, quietly thinking about the issues of the day, like all that fuss over Baltimore and rats and race. Didn't a brilliant columnist just say that the left's overuse of the race card would remove its sting? Oh, race card, where's thy sting? Well, look at what's just happened. Congressman Elijah Cummings, a Democrat, ripped on President Trump's handling of overcrowding on the southern border. And Trump, not playing nice, not playing like other Republicans who, I guess, whose idea when they're confronted by stuff is to shut up and take it, ripped right back like the vulgarian barbarian that he is, saying Cummings' district was rat infested. Naturally, the liberal media shrieked that this was racist, well, because Trump. But then came stories of Baltimore being rat infested, not like Chicago, but almost. The former mayor complaining she could smell all those rats.
What the hell? We should just take all this down. Ooh, you can smell the rats. Ooh, Jesus.
And then that notorious race baiter himself, anti-Semite, Reverend L. Tawana Brawley Sharpton, got involved. Democrats embraced Sharpton for defending them, and Trump ripped on him too, and the Democrats running for president ran to Sharpton's defense idiotically, like Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris. And with all this stupidity all over the place, I just wished I was in my garden thinking about how kind and tolerant L. Sharpton has been to certain people like me. The media love him. They pay him. And still, I think he does care for me personally.
White folks was in the cave when we had built empires. We learned to admire them, but they knew to admire us. We built pyramids where Donald Trump ever knew what architecture was. We taught philosophy and astrology and mathematics before Socrates and them Greek homos ever got around.
Hey, Al, check your media privilege. With Al Sharpton worrying about the Greeks and everyone else, I'd be out in the garden pinching off suckers and picking the early girls and using jute to shore up my cucumber trellises and getting away from all that noise. But here we are, Zeus and me in what used to be the garden, and now it's time to get in the car, light a cigar, listen to music of Baroque, and drive down for that podcast. We've got some great guests today. First, of course, my friend and co-host, Jeff Carlin, executive producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis, and Bill Brady, former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party, now a consultant for Next Generation Strategies, is here. He wants to talk politics and space. And my good friend Dan Michalopoulos, the political investigative reporter for WBEZ, is here to talk about his story, Alderman Carrie Austin and her $600,000 yearly taxpayer-subsidized salaries for her family. They're all on the payroll and they're eating just fine. And you, maybe you're not on the Carrie Austin payroll. And maybe you're not interested in what Al Sharpton has to say. Maybe you're in your own garden right now. No matter where you are. No matter what you're doing. Whether you hate Socrates or love Socrates, you're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
The Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward, with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
You know how nepotism blooms? On the many branches of Alderman Carrie Austin's family tree. And my friend Dan Michalopoulos of WBEZ, formerly of the Sun-Times, formerly of the Chicago Tribune, and now the investigative political reporter at WBEZ, had this great story on hundreds of thousands of dollars a year going into the, I guess from taxpayers, going to support the Austin family. How does that work, Dan?
Well, yeah, it is all taxpayer money, John. The way it works is mysteriously, Carrie Austin, before her, her husband and predecessor as alderman of the 34th Ward, they were powerful politicians under Mayor Richard M. Daley, under Mayor Rahm Emanuel. She was the budget committee chairman, and coincidentally or not, many members of her family get jobs on the payroll. We found at one point at the height of her power until very recently, there were, I think, seven members of the Austin family on the city payroll, another working for Secretary of State Jesse White. And as you said, the total that they were getting was close to $600,000 a year in salaries plus benefits and pensions and whatnot. Now, I should say, Carrie Austin believes that she did not help her kids, but we found evidence that points to the opposite being the case, that she helped them very much. Four of the people that were in her office, two sons, a daughter-in-law, and a granddaughter, were all hired directly by Carrie Austin. And then you have, Lori Lightfoot comes in, and Carrie Austin, for the first time in her career, has bet on the wrong horse. She was with Tony Preckwinkle in the mayoral race earlier this year. And so she loses her budget committee chairmanship. And having lost that, a couple of her relatives lost their jobs just on June 28th. But quite a nepotism record for Carrie Austin, rivaled, as we say, perhaps only by Joe Berrios, the former Democratic boss in recent years. Although, of course, nepotism has existed in Chicago politics for generations.
So $600,000 a year, you can argue that's theft of the taxpayers' money, as we say. And I'm just wondering, where's Lori Lightfoot on this? Because I know that she's already called for Burke to resign, and rightfully so. What has she said about Carrie Austin resigning?
Well, I think, we have to point out Burke has been indicted, and he denies wrongdoing, but he's actually been indicted. Carrie Austin, her office was raided on June the 19th, her ward office in the 34th Ward down on 111th Street. She has not been charged. She also, she wouldn't discuss the federal investigation with me. She did give me an interview, or a couple phone calls, actually, back last week, right before we were going to publish. In the past, when I pointed out, so I should say, keeping it to Lori Lightfoot, though, that what she said is that, she's watching the case closely, and that she'll see what happens and go from there. But, there hasn't been an indictment. There haven't been charges yet against Carrie Austin or anybody around her. On the other hand, she's also the vice chairwoman of the Cook County Democratic Party, and I think Tony Preckwinkle, who is the chair of the Cook County Democratic Party, having deposed her former ally, Joe Berrios, just last year, Tony Preckwinkle says, the same thing essentially as Lori Lightfoot, that nobody's been charged yet, and they're standing by Carrie Austin in her capacity as 34th Ward Alderman and Vice Chairwoman of the Cook County Democratic Party, at least for the time being. But we could discuss the relationship between Austin and Lightfoot more extensively in terms of, she stripped her of the big chairmanship with all the jobs and all the control over the money, the billions of dollars, I think close to $9 billion in the city budget. But she did give her another committee chairmanship as a consolation prize. So bottom line, we haven't had a chance yet, though, to ask Lori Lightfoot, because our story just came out on Friday. We haven't had a chance to catch Lori Lightfoot and ask her about what she makes of Carrie Austin and the people that she had in her offices.
Yeah, well, the friend of my friend is my friend, apparently, even for reformers. But I have to give Carrie Austin some props here, okay? She knew she had already been raided. And then she shows up at that South Side whatever it was, dog and pony show photo op about, you know, violence in the schools with Lori Lightfoot standing right next to her. She had already been raided and freaked out, and she gets herself together, goes down to the news conference, says something ridiculous about God has made us a star today or something. Remember that? And
I mean the juxtaposition was right. Interesting, although I'm not sure had she been I know that the raid was the same day, but did Kerry Austin know that the raid had taken place or
yeah it was reported that
already?
Yeah, someone asked her about it and that it had happened early, and then that she was crying. People saw her go into her house, which is right across the street from her office, and then that she had been upset looking when she went on her way to the event.
Yeah. Also, I have it on from impeccable sources. Yeah, we're at that meeting. Another thing, though, Dan, what is going to come of this investigation of Kerry? She loses her budget committee, which means, I guess, I don't know who really got hurt more, Kerry Austin's patronage for her family or Alderman Edward Burke leverage not having a de facto chairmanship on budget as well as finance. And how do those budget staffers, did they line up to run to the FBI to tell them everything they know about what Burke did on budget, or are they kind of quiet now under a flat rock, licking moisture off the top of it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we got to point out at this point that the raid was of Kerry Austin's 34th ward off, you know, the ward operation, not the budget committee, to my knowledge. I don't know that they haven't seen any evidence that they raided the budget committee. Obviously, she's the chairman of the budget committee from 2007 until, what, like a couple months ago, I think it was, that she lost that job once Lori Lightfoot got sworn in and got her new budget committee chairman, committee chairman lineup all approved by the council almost reflexively. But, yeah, there was a bit of horse trading going on there, a bit of jockeying. And, you know, Kerry Austin begged to keep the budget committee post because she said she would be as loyal to Lori Lightfoot, although she hadn't supported her in the campaign. She said she would be as loyal to Lori Lightfoot as she had been to Daley and to Rahm Emanuel. And I do remember another anecdote. Again, I'm not sure if it's apocryphal, but I think it was reported that after she passed a budget for Rahm Emanuel, he took her to dinner and brought her flowers. So I thought that was one interesting connection.
That is sweet. It's sort of like, I don't know, my heart warms with tenderness to think of the two of them together at dinner. You know, Rahm with so much respect for Kerry.
No, I mean, I understand looking forward and saying what is Lightfoot going to do, but I think we also have to remember at this point that the nepotism bloomed on many more branches while Rahm was the mayor. And, you know, let's talk about some of the jobs specifically. Where we first kind of saw this hint of Kerry Austin and her nepotism although we didn't know the full extent of it until now, till we kind of looked through her whole genealogy and matched her family tree with the city payroll. But she had hired a son of hers as ward soup a couple years ago. I don't know if you remember, I reported on this in the Sun-Times in 2017. She had a son named Kenny who got fired from the city, essentially, or he was about to get fired, and he quit before they could fire him. He was recommended for termination by the inspector general, crashed the city vehicle, allegedly had another driver.
$80,000 a year.
Another passenger in the car say he was the driver. Without boring you with all those details, he was forced out of the city, but he got a job with his mom as the ward superintendent.
Right.
For Streets and Sand in the 34th Ward. And, you know, it's a Streets and Sand job technically, but you and I know that, and everyone knows that the aldermen pick who their ward soups are. It's an exempt position. It's exempt from the anti-patronage rules, from the civil service rules. She hires her son, John, and what do you have there?
Can you not trust your son?
It's a situation that's been allowed to fester by the mayor at that time.
We've seen so much going on lately, and we're speaking to my friend and colleague and probably, I think, the best political investigative reporter in town, Dan Michalopoulos of WBEZ.
Oh, thanks, John. But yeah.
The fact remains he is the best. Now, take us up another, let's go another 10,000 feet higher. We've got Kerry Austin getting dinged. You've got federal investigations all over City Hall. We've got Danny Solis wired up. I don't know who he talked to. You know, I don't even know if he could have talked to Rahm Emanuel, for God's sake. You know, who knows, right? Louis Gutierrez is silent. Have you heard from Louis?
Danny? Yeah, I mean, there's a big connection there between Louis and Danny Solis. I think they go back a ways in terms of their alliance. You remember at one point about 12 years ago, before Louis actually did retire, he said that he was going to retire and then took it back. And during that period, everybody in that district that wanted the job, it seemed, was throwing their hat in the ring. And the one guy that didn't was Danny Solis, although he wanted the job. And I think he knew that Louis was posturing or doing whatever he was doing, or that he would possibly continue in the job. There's also Roberto Caldero, who surfaces in this Danny Solis situation. But as far as Rahm Emanuel or other people at City Hall, you know, I've heard it said that maybe the vast majority of the aldermen are on these recordings. Well, a lot of reporters could be, too. I mean, he was the head of the zoning committee. So
I'm sure I'm on him.
I'm surprised if not every alderman is on there, or I would guess more than 40 out of the 50 should be on those recordings. But what ends up being something criminal and something that comes to public light, I think we don't know yet. I think a lot of people are spinning in their seats, considering the various possibilities.
And Dan, in your reporting too, you point out that this isn't the kind of patronage just key to Kerry Austin. We seen this in the Berrios family. I mean, another household with 12 plus or so family members on the public dole.
Dan did that too.
Well, yeah, one time. Right now, he's lost his clout.
Right. Yeah. That's what'll happen when the tree sours. But Austin, you're reporting too. You mentioned how the number of voters under a single roof, and kind of walk us through what the importance of why that number is kind of startling.
Well, Austin asked me, why is that important? And you know, I don't know what all everybody wants to make of it. But so there's two houses that we've been talking about here recently with Kerry Austin. There's a house that you mentioned earlier in our conversation, just across the street on the same block, the 500 block of 111th Street, which she's owned for a long time. And that's the house where she's still registered to vote. And I think 10 other relatives of hers, or 10 other people, almost all of whom, if not all of whom, are relatives of hers, all registered to vote at the same address. I just found it odd because this is what I told Kerry Austin when she called me, 1,257 square foot house, and all those people plus anybody who's not yet of voting age, maybe children, grandchildren, whatnot, are all living in that 1,257 square foot house. I don't know. She says yes. All I can tell you. Now, there's another house that she moved into just last year, new construction, also in the ward. And that is the house that the feds are looking into the construction and the purchase of that house. That is something that we know they're looking into because the grand jury was asking for documents regarding that newly constructed house. But I went and looked up the voter registration because I was trying to put together her family tree. And I was stunned that there are 11 registered voters at one house. I mean, that 11 votes, you know, you only need a few thousand votes to be elected alderman.
Isn't that, that's rather Homeric, Dan. I mean, I'm just speculating here, but it would be a lot shorter. Like, say if I lived in Crete or some of the other, you know, Country Club Hills or some of the other south suburbs, and I was working for the county or wherever, you could register at grandma's house. Right? And who's going to check?
I'm not going to speculate what the reality of the situation is there because I'm not under that roof. I did notice on the picture from the assessor's office, a picture of the house, because all of us can look up any property that is in the county, whether we own it or not. On the assessor's website, there are little awnings over the windows that have the letter A, which I guess stands for Austin. So in case the people in the neighborhood doesn't know who lives there. But I thought that Carrie Austin bought a new house. I thought she moved into the other one. And I don't know as a candidate if she filed which address. But when she ran for re-election and won, by the way, earlier this year, won another four-year term. That was before the raid, of course. But Carrie Austin, 11 people in one house. I just, I don't want to criticize how anybody else chooses to live or what kind of proximity they want or have to have to their relatives for whatever reason, financial or otherwise. But I would guess that, 11 people in a 1,257-square-foot house is snug.
Is a very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy.
Dan Michalopoulos is writing on WBEZ's website, nepotism blooms on many branches of Alderman Carrie Austin's family tree, $600,000 for her family, because, they're qualified and your kids aren't. But in the meantime,
one of your colleagues, Shannon Hefferman, was writing about how a ordinance hopefully passed by the Lori Lightfoot would lead to the release of the Laquan McDonald data and information. What kind of impact do you see something like that happening on the way things are now, especially now that Rahm's gone?
This is a long-running saga, obviously, that are we going to find out the whole truth and nothing but the truth about the whole Laquan McDonald situation that roiled the city's politics and really, in many cases, I would say, contributed maybe more than anything to the fact that Lori Lightfoot is the mayor and not Rahm Emanuel or someone other than Rahm Emanuel. Specifically to what you're speaking about, she campaigned for mayor to replace the retiring Rahm Emanuel on the notion that they would make everything public. And then, of course, as soon as she's elected, members of the media, I believe, including my colleagues, are asking for these documents. And what happens is, the city says no. And I don't know if I want to say too much about it because my colleagues on the criminal justice team at WBZ, I don't know what the options are for the FOIA battle, the Freedom of Information Act battle. But, we do know publicly now Lori Lightfoot is taking steps to follow through on that promise to pass something through the city council that would clear one of the hurdles, but it may not be the only hurdle, is what it looks like. So I'm not sure that we're going to come that much closer to finding out the whole truth and nothing but the truth, because there, like I said, other legal hurdles potentially. I don't know why she would hesitate, and I think that now they're plowing ahead with what she said she was going to do, but can she make it happen? I don't know.
What do you make of the controversy, or so it's called, where one of the FOP vice presidents shows up to lambast the mayor at a news conference, and she says under her breath, "Oh, this FOP clown," and it's treated as if it's like some terrible outrage. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, I don't know if she thinks that the whole FOP are clowns or that even all their leadership is. There's a group there, no doubt, that got elected a couple years ago, didn't think, or at least they campaigned on the notion that the past group of leadership, the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge here, representing the police officers of Chicago, they campaigned on the fact that they had been too soft in protecting the rights and the of the police officers, and the police officers who got in situations where they were accused of wrongdoing, or at least making mistakes. And this new group comes in, and I can say that I believe that the positions that they've espoused and are probably not shared by the vast majority of the rest of the Chicagoans. They may be shared clearly by the vast majority of the members of the police department, who are the largest group of municipal employees that there is, but man, I don't know that the way that they've gone about things is, especially in a city where, you know, it was, you know, 12.5% for Trump and 76% for Lori Lightfoot then in the mayoral election. I don't know that the police is really in tune with the people that they're ostensibly serving and protecting. And so I'm not sure that it hurts her very much to call the guy a clown. You know, Pat Murray, I think it's unfortunate because I've known him for a long time, actually.
Would you consider him a thoughtful man?
Well, you know, I know that he used to be at City. He knows his way around City Hall. He used to be one of the police officers assigned over there at City Hall. And, John, you know, having been like me, a one-time City Hall beat reporter in the press room there on the second floor behind the council chambers, you know those police officers that are there. Those are pretty plum gigs, right? They don't just, you know, fall off a turnip truck and get put at City Hall.
Danny, so what I know about City Hall.
That was under Daley, by the way.
What I know about City Hall is that when Richard M. Daley was mayor, there would never, even if they hated him, and they did, and they couldn't stand him, and they almost turned their backs on him after Sirianni got killed, they would never stand in a city council meeting and confront the mayor in that kind of way and get right in his face. It just wouldn't happen. And
these
so that,
different times, though.
I know,
they,
no,
they
I got
you. Assault, you know, even before she became the mayor.
I got you.
But did they do that with Rahm? I don't know. They were very critical of Rahm. There's no doubt about that.
I'm glad they have the right to be critical. They're, you know, citizens, sure. They have the right. But I'm just saying that in terms of getting in somebody's face, they would never have gotten into Daley's face. They never did. And Flynn never did.
Well, it must be playing well with their membership.
Yeah, that's what it's about. And this is about a negotiation. And on one hand, that's going on. On the other hand, at least they're not the teachers' union, which is sending delegations to Venezuela to tell us how wonderful the socialist government of the murderous dictator Maduro has been. They did that. The CTU did that.
There's no doubt a vast gulf not only between the police union and most of the people in Chicago. There's a vast gulf between the politics of the police union and the politics of the Chicago Teachers Union. There's no doubt about that.
All right, then. Thanks, Dan Michalopoulos from WBEZ on his great story on Carrie Austin and her $600,000 family payroll that you're paying for. Nepotism blooms on many branches.
Thanks.
Carrie Austin's family tree. Thanks, Danny.
Thanks so much, Case.
See you, buddy.
Thanks, Sam.
It's a family affair. It's a family affair. It's a family affair.
Now our guest is Pat Brady, former Illinois Republican Party chairman, currently principal co-owner of Next Generation Strategies, which is a political consultancy, or are you just a lobbyist?
Do lobbying. We do some political work and some media work. Thank you, John.
Yeah, and you appear on WGN often with Eric Edelstein, right?
Yeah, on Thursdays on the Cochran Show.
Yeah,
great guy. I think it's the whole pitch was we can have a discussion, not scream at each other, because we don't really agree on policy-wise on much. He's a big Democrat.
Okay, so what's going on in politics? We just had your best friend, Jeannie Ives, on.
Did you?
Yeah, she was wonderful. I was just I just was hoping to get a picture of Jeannie Ives and Pat Brady raising hands when she wins the election.
The primary or the general? So she's running against Sean Casson in the 6th, which was formerly Peter Roskam's seat. He lost by 7 to Casson.
She has to beat. She has to defeat Evelyn Sanguinetti
in the primary.
Like,
yes,
it's like a Rauner Ives 2.
I don't think really. I'm not sure if her money was all from Dick Uihlein, the guy that funds all the far right, the one that paid for the ad, the racist, homophobic ad that she ran.
And the one that you hated.
Well, everybody hated it that is around this because it made everybody look bad. It was one of the worst, most offensive ads I've ever seen.
You never miss an opportunity.
Well, she's a kid.
What I'm saying is, like, the guy who talks about unity never misses, and I like you, man, but yeah. You never miss an opportunity to
stick that knife in there.
Well, here's the deal. I care about the party and the conservative movement, and ads like that and words of the president are very damaging to the Republican brand. It makes it more difficult for Republicans to get elected.
Prediction. After, I predict that right now the way it looks, even though he's doing his best to not get elected, if the economy holds, Trump has a really good chance of being elected. But after that, there won't be a Republican for quite the next one after Trump will be a Democrat. And I don't see what Democrat will be serious enough after the Gang of Four. You want to talk about extremes? The Gang of Four is now with, I think, maybe total 100,000 votes.
Yeah, it's
between the four of them, the so-called socialist Spice Girls. I like Gang of Four because it's more accurate. 100,000 votes, maybe, and they're dictating the whole party, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's what the Republicans or the president is wants the country to think, and it may be true. I think the smarter people that have been around longer don't want that to happen because they are way out of the mainstream on everything.
But the media loves them.
Yeah, the same way that the media loved Trump 3 years ago. They put him on TV much more than the other Republican candidates. And the reality is, I think people need to remember the media, some of these cable out, they're trying to make money.
Right.
And they want audiences, and you know better than anybody, and that's how you make money. But yeah, the some of the things that come out of their mouths are really troubling and disturbing, uninformed, and a view that I don't think shared by, like you said, maybe 100,000 people. There's not a lot of support within the Democratic caucus for them either. But they're just scared of him because she has 2.3 million Twitter followers.
But they leverage the point of view of the Democratic Party now. These four.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
With their extreme nonsense.
Yeah, and it is nonsense. And listening to Ocasio-Cortez, it's scary, the stuff that comes out of her mouth. If you really watch what she says, I know she's a bright woman, but she is not informed on many of the issues that she likes to spout off about, including foreign policy. But you listen to what they say, the four of them, and it's scary.
Yeah.
And the president, I think, is smart to try to tie the Democrats to them because they're very way out of the mainstream.
So where does it go from here?
I don't know. I think part of the problem is there's 24 of them running now, so there's no one voice. Biden really hasn't filled that big void. You could probably do it by tiers. But I they got to do something after Labor Day and come up. My issue with them is they have no message. Trump's an idiot. It's not a winning message. It didn't win 4 years ago. So they have to come up with, and even some of the, like Kamala Harris, who actually tries to portray herself as more mainstream. She was on 2 weeks ago talking about Medicare for all, and you're going to get ready. We're going to take away your private health insurance.
Yeah,
now, she walked that back over the weekend. But some of their policy positions are so far to the left that,
plus, it doesn't help her that Willie Brown's out there waiting to brag on how he, whatever he did with Kamala Harris's career, you know? I mean, just, it's not a good look for her down the road.
No.
In the meantime, though, Biden, even though he's holding on, I just see like a Jeb Bush type there.
Yeah. I don't know if you talked to the reporters covering Iowa, he's not getting crowds. Like, I mean, you've been over there. You know how it goes. The crowds, you build up the crowds. You went to Iowa, you go to New Hampshire. But he's not getting the crowds. And there was an observation made, and I had the same observation. I saw Senator Biden, who I like a lot. I saw him at McCain's funeral. He looks frail. He looks old. And that's, he's had a very difficult life.
He looks old. Beto looks like a loser. This booted.
Beto's polling at zero in New Hampshire.
Jesus. This kid, Buttigieg, is whatever.
Boot edge.
Whatever. It's, he's up against that whole police issue for him,
right.
And that'll blow up. So it looks like to me like it's either Warren or Kamala Harris. Although I kind of like this, if I'm going to bet on a dark horse, it would be Tulsi Gabbard, even though they have zero votes out of Hawaii.
Yeah.
She just seems like has that. But
she's way out there on the left.
They're all way out there.
But she's the way I stand there. She's really.
I hate to tell you like a secret about me, and it's not about me. It's about you. But still, I was a Democrat. See, the Democratic Party left me.
Sure.
And millions of us. I didn't leave it.
Yeah. No, you know, am I?
Conservative Democrat.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's
pro American, pro jobs in America. You know, all
well,
good
here,
borders.
How about this, too? When Kennedy ran in 60, he ran on a tax cut and a missile gap with the Russians. He wouldn't get through one meeting at the Democratic National Committee right on that platform.
He wouldn't be elected.
No.
You know?
But I want to get back to this, too, though. You talk about, and this is where not the Republican Party, but which is supposed to be the conservative mood. This is where Trump lost me, because the behavior has lost me. And there's people like me that don't want to vote for what the Democrats are proposing, but he's not giving them an alternative. When you do send these tweets and make the attacks he's made, it's just a series of things.
Yeah, I know, but
you lose
not,
people.
But here's the thing about that. I don't like them, and I've said that is, you know, column. I know my lefty friends don't selectively read what they want to read. When I called his tweets racist, I meant it. Okay.
Yeah.
But when Elijah Cummings attacks him, right, on the border issue, and he punches back, see, Republicans for a long time, you used to punch back, but many of you trying to get your colleagues to punch back, they wouldn't, because I remember John McCain, he nailed Obama on like child of the machine, corruption, Tony Resco, all that stuff, and then pulled that ad off because it was just too much for John McCain. He wanted to be beloved by the media, and guess what? They'll never, you know, if
yeah, I'm not
look
sure
at if Romney, look at Romney, okay?
Yeah.
The big racist that they made him look to be. Come on. So when Trump points out Baltimore, and then the first reaction is, how dare he? Extreme, like how David Axelrod used to say, extreme. And then you see stuff coming out, you know, about the mayor of Baltimore, their past mayor, walking through the streets saying, it's rat infested, it stinks, let's tear this down. It's hard to say it's just racist as opposed to, I think, a smart thing, even though I don't think he intended it, to call out the Democratic Party for what they've done to the inner cities in America ever since Daniel Patrick Moynihan warned them in 1968.
But there's a way to do that when you're commander-in-chief, leader of the free world, and president of the most amazing country in the history of the globe. You don't need to use words that are dog whistles for dark-skinned people, like rats and rodents and things like that.
I don't think those are dark.
I think you can drop.
If I were a Democrat, if I were a Democratic activist, I would say, yes, those are dog whistles.
Yes. But here, let me finish.
When black Democratic mayors say rats and rodents, then it's okay. So come on.
No, neither of them should be saying it, because people live there, and that's the blowback you got over the weekend. The point is, there's a way that he could vary effectively attack the Democratic control of the urban areas and the mess that they've made of it, and not throw in the dog whistles. To me, it's just, we deserve better than what we get from him, and that's when you lose voters.
I agree there. I agree that we deserve better, but I also agree that for many, many years, I mean, that's why, look, I wanted Rand Paul. I still do. I don't think he'll make it now that he's opposed to the budget deal. You know, he's just
here's back to whether the party has left you or not. I remember my dad proudly saying, I voted for Barry Goldwater, and I'm the only one that'll still admit it.
In your heart, you know I'm right.
You know I'm right. But I mean, I believe in the conservative approach to government. The reason I say that is this president's not a conservative. He doesn't, his policies aren't conservative. So that, like Rand Paul, out of principle, I'll support that. Yeah. So that's kind of where I go too.
So yes, Trump falls short on many things. But one thing he doesn't fall short on, by accident, maybe by his, you know, arrogant, brutish luck, he's hit on something that the Republicans have been unable to do, which is, I think, what I've been writing about for quite some time. I've asked you and asked you, Jeff, how can the Republicans take the Democratic love of the open border issue, because that's what it is. It's open border on their side.
On the far left.
On the far left, but also on the general Democrats is, we want voters. those voters. We want those people.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the subtext.
You know, free health care, free health care for illegals, all that stuff that they said.
And no voter ID laws.
No voter ID. And how can Republicans drive a wedge legitimately and point out to African Americans, hey, they've taken you for granted, and they're going to Latinos on the southern border to get new voters, and they're dumping you, and they're slapping you around, and they've slapped you around for 60, 70, 80 years in the big cities, welfare, crime, bad education, corruption. You can tick them off, and all we have here is Elijah Cummings types, who's a smarter version of Bobby Rush and who's the West Side guy? Danny Davis. It's that generation that has not treated African Americans well in the inner city.
Invalid point, but how do you make that argument or persuade people to vote for your party when you have send out messages almost weekly that have arguably a racist undercurrent to them? They're not going to trust you.
That's if I were, again, counselor, if I'm a judge here, I would admonish the court.
You look like a judge, man. You got your suspenders, your tie. You look good.
That's right. I need the suspenders. Not a fashion statement. They're keeping my pants up.
You're not wearing a belt with them, are you?
No. I'm not going to be like Slim Pickens in One Eyed Jacks, one of my favorite movies of all time.
He's the best.
One Eyed Jacks, I live till I die.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted Pat to be here is to just talk a little space, because we kind of glossed over this in the Chicago way, but the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 launch and landing, one of the coolest moments in human achievements, if not the, and I love it. And Pat, you're a big space head. Oh, I mean, yeah,
fantastic. There's so much space on Smithsonian Channel. I could have landed the lunar module, I think, by the time. I bet I watched 50 hours of space. Wasn't that amazing?
Oh, my God. It was really good stuff. And I know a lot of people will knock and say, hey, you know, this country's got plenty of problems. Why are we...
Do you know things that, and you know this, but yeah, anybody, the products that have come out of the space program, the advances we made?
Countless products, including...
space food sticks.
Didn't technically come out of the space program. It was the other way around, but... I mean, the idea of Teflon and Velcro and microwave and computing and microcomputing and deep...
And weaponizing space.
Well, weaponizing space.
We threatened that. We didn't have the capability, but the Russians couldn't figure that out.
Right. That's what got us to space in the first place. The ability, I thought that we could drop a bomb from space and it would make it a lot easier to do it anywhere in the world. But ultimately, we wound up going because it was this idea that we could, and this idea that we could see the future. I didn't grow up with it, obviously. I was a shuttle program plus kid. But did you ever get down to see a shuttle or even a rocket, big rocket like an Atlas or anything?
I went down and saw them all. Yeah, I never saw one lift off. Stupidly, I was in Florida when the space shuttle took off at night, and I didn't get over there because I was over in Orlando. But I've been to all that, been to Air and Space a million times. Watched the space shuttle go over my house once when it was in a low orbit a couple of years ago. I took the kids out in the front yard. You remember that when it was in a real low orbit? It came whipping over the house. It looked like a big fat jet. And it very cool. We had Jim Lovell on, Apollo 13 and Apollo 8, probably more importantly, Apollo 8, the other day. And he told the story that, long story short, Lovell was involved from the beginning. And in Apollo, I think 13 or maybe it was 8, the NASA asked the three of them to write notes to their wives about if we don't come back and blah, blah, blah. Lovell goes, I'm not writing a note. What he did is he went to Neiman Marcus, ordered a mink coat, and delivered it to his wife on Christmas Day and said, here's a mink coat from the man on the moon. I mean, these guys are real.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the nerve? Because the one takeaway from all these shows I watched is these things were, you know, 1 in 3 chance you're coming back.
Right.
These rockets were not.
Well, and that was, and then Lovell famously said to his wife, you know, as they were getting ready to it, she says, well, are you... You're going to go to the moon. Are you going to make it? You know, are you going to make it there? Are you going to make it back? And he's like, this was months out. So, well, they just told us we're going to do this. So I'm going to give it 60-40, you know, the chances we don't make it. And you're like, well, that's the idea. And I know they were heartbroken when after Apollo 11, when we lost 3 fantastic human beings and Americans. But the idea that they were test pilots, they were guys who were designed, this is their goal. This is the giddy up that got them going. was the testing this new technology and being the ones who were in the seat. I mean,
and that's what they said about when Neil Armstrong was flying down to the moon, and he had to actually hand fly it down. And the guy on one of these shows said, that's why you have test pilots in there, because they know what to do when they have to do it.
And remember, when you, to your point about how it wasn't a done deal.
Oh, God,
just
no.
A few years, I think 2 years before, Bill White and the other astronauts burned
Grissom and Chafee. Yep.
Right.
Yep. Apollo 1.
So this thing, you know, people think it was just the Challenger. No, this happened before. And still went for it.
They still went for it. You go, you look at Air and Space and see the command module. Mm-hmm. Tiny.
Yeah.
The lunar module looks like a toy.
Insane.
But what a great accomplishment. And that's what I think the country needs. Maybe it's Biden's onto something with a cancer moonshot, but something that, because the whole world got behind that.
You know, I'd love to speak more about space, but I have to come back to Earth in Illinois just for a bit. What happened to the Republican Party in Illinois? Man, and I don't want to just hear about you and Dan Prof fighting. There's something about, I'm freaked out about, and I like the guy, Bill Brady, state Senate, minority leader, opposed to gambling, and then getting cut in on a deal. I just don't understand how that plays out long term.
Yeah, and Bill's a lifelong friend.
I know
I'm
sorry to, ask.
The thing is, and it goes back to, and I know you get mad at me when I talk about this, but and it's not about me and Prof arguing. I've played a million rounds of golf with Prof. I get along with him just fine. I just don't agree with him. The brand is bad because there have been things like the commercial I referenced before, I know you get mad at me about, but things we can't do and win. And I'm not saying that if you look at what the Democrats have done historically in the state, we all know where it is. But when you look at somebody like Lori Lightfoot, who actually is a very honest broker, I think, and not a politician, and just says, sometimes gets her in trouble. And I think people are, to your point, people crave that because they're fed up with it all on either side. Right. And we'd be better off being more like that than trying to be smooth and political about everything.
But I just see the Republican Party seeding. I think I got to go. And again, a guy that you were not friends with, Bill Cellini, that whole crew. I look back to that time period when deals were made with the Democrats, not you, I'm just saying the others. Yeah. And it was just, and I just see Mike Madigan get stronger and stronger. And now, at least we can agree on something, that the feds are, hunting that tiger? What do you see?
It sounds like, and it's, look at the subpoenas and the press accounts. It looks like it's pretty narrowly focused, and obviously somebody's cooperating. But to a bigger point, back to kind of Lori Lightfoot and what's gone on with Burke and the investigations, don't you sense a real sea change here, potentially revolutionary change in the way things are done? It's not going to happen overnight, but it seems like.
I would like that, but then again, the CTU sends a delegation to Venezuela. Okay, so that really they're just reinforcing how the old way things were done.
Yeah, but once the relation, there's that public sector union Democratic Party relationship, which is strong. Once one side doesn't play ball anymore, then the other side can't. I mean, maybe if there's a change on the elected official side, there might be change in that. But CTU's always going to have, they got that many votes.
It's just crazy, you know. I'm still upset. Why did these legislators think they could take 6 weeks off in August? In the state and in Congress. What, are they kidding? Who takes 6 weeks off?
Not to mention that they're all making 70,000 plus.
Well, those in Illinois, part-time job, technically.
Yeah. There was a steelworker.
More than I am, and then some.
So. United Steelworkers used to get 15 weeks off. And I asked my dad when I was a young reporter, I said, Dad, you know, these steelworkers get 15 weeks off. He goes, really? They won't be around long. And you know what? They weren't. Right. Okay, Pat Brady.
John, you look great, buddy. Congratulations.
Thank you, buddy.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Well, I guess that means we should go get some linguine right now and a couple drinks.
Top it off. Thanks, guys. Jeffrey, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
For Pat Brady, former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party and principal with Next Generation Strategies. And for Dan Michalopoulos, the top political investigative reporter in town for WBEZ on his great story on Kerry Austin and that $600,000 family tree that you're paying for. For Jeff Carlin, WGN producer of The Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, not a gardener anymore, columnist for the Chicago Tribune and member of its editorial board. Thanks for joining us in another edition of the Chicago Way.